Welcome back to the Saturn Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info. And this is hour 42, and we're listening to Michael from Maui. And today is the 20th of May, 2008. So Michael's connection started when he wanted God to show himself. Aliens came in their spacecraft to pick him up. He was taken out to an architectural world near Saturn, a huge luminous sphere that can be seen by telescopes from Earth, and the Cassini spacecraft has returned images from Saturn for the past 2 years. Many of them can be seen on our website. Click on the link, NASA Connection. And for those of you who have a copy of the Urantia book, you personally have one of the connections to this amazing story Michael has been telling us. Let's bring Michael on. Aloha, Michael.
Aloha.
Hello, well, welcome back. It's
Yeah, I'm glad to be back. Got some interesting stuff that was emailed to us.
Yes, you can start off with that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, Paul emailed us some links to YouTube, and the first one I looked at was Alien Speech Found in NASA's Saturn Radio Signal. And being a telecommunications specialist and having, well, professionally, well over 30 years in telecommunications, it's something that's right up my alley. And as I said before, I, at the age of 5, was brought into radio by my dad, who was a ham radio operator and engineer. I myself am a radio engineer also. And it was interesting. I like it. And especially like what I could hear behind it. First of all, I, understand the implications, the intonations. And then I noticed, wait a minute, this is not alien language. This is English. How do you like that?
Yeah, that's rather flooring to hear that from Saturn.
It's a little bit interesting, but I'll give you the words that it, see what's happened here is it's not a purely detected signal. It's been demodulated and somewhat heterodyned down a little bit more toward a lower level. So there's been some adjustments made to the audio a bit, so it sounds a little lower. And probably more intelligible. It's meant really, it's really simply detected. It doesn't go through any, this is not a digital signal, it's an analog signal. And analog, of course, is like AM radio, and that's basically what it is. It's an AM signal. It has been detected, and they just were curious what it was sound like, so they tried to demodulate it down a little bit more, and it sounded interesting, almost like speech. And then I began to realize what I knew what it meant, and I said, "Well, let's see if it really has words in there." And I listened to it carefully, and it comes up with a very simple sentence. And should I try to play this?
Yes,
On.
go ahead. Try and play it.
Try to play it? Oh, let's
Sure.
see what it sounds like.
I'll have it on the website under
Oh, okay.
Michael's Hours. Now that sounds like a su
And I knew the meaning meant it was pointing toward the triunity of God because, again, it was my request that God prove himself to me. And that's how I come, I took a ride there.
Right.
And it would make sense that they would put some kind of beacon or easily demodulated signal, and it sounds like this. If you go back and listen to it, it says, "These three for you are the God in heaven," and it goes, "Whoop," the high pitch, three high pitch tones, which are symbolics of the triunity, the triune God. "These three for you are the God in heaven," and that, those are the words that are being said, pointing out this truth, this description of deity of God. And it was something that was taught to me there, and it was something that is also taught in the Urantia book, the Bible, Buddhism, who doesn't really speak of a God per se, but acknowledge three as God in heaven. Many other faiths point out three, a triunity type of deity or deity arrangement. And of course, we know that the old Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, that goes back to whether it's Catholicism or just Christianity in general. And it's amazing to hear the symbolism and the tones, but to actually hear the English demodulated and then just set up by the rings themselves, radiating this this message, which is, again, "These three for you are the God in heaven." How do you like that as an interpretation? Or you can take it for what you want. I know somebody already scared the poop out of them, so they had to say this is nothing but poop. But anyway, it's truly what I think it sounds like. And if you play it over again with that understanding, you will begin to hear the words very clearly. Over.
Oh, great. Well, that's good. We can actually hear the words once you've told us what they were.
Yeah. I went in there with a actual understanding of, because again, I can pretty much ask and I receive an understanding, which doesn't mean an interpretation in English. It gives an understanding, and it pointed me quickly back to a scriptural text, and I found it. And the scriptural text, of course, comes from the actual writer of the book of Revelation, which is John. He was the apostle that was stuck on the island of Patmos and supposedly wrote the book of Revelation in a superlative manner. He wasn't sure if he was at the island of Patmos or was taken somewhere else. I suspect he might have been taken to the New Jerusalem and given some education and then compiled the Revelation. But in another book he compiled, which is 1 John chapter 5, verse 7, it ends up with, "There are three that bear record in heaven, the Father, Son, and the Spirit." Well, anyway, that's where I was pointed to right away, but, you know, those words weren't heard. You know, I didn't quite hear those words that way, so I just decided to listen and see what I could hear. And it was "these three," again, "these three for you." This is the difference. It makes it on a personal level. "These three for you," the listener, "are the God in heaven." And it sounds like whale songs. I hear that pitch go like that in through the hull of my boat many times when I hear the whales swimming by, singing that three-noted tone, same way.
Wow.
And, those big humpbacks come through Hawaii every year, and they're famous for singing the songs. And one of them is like that.
Yeah, right off the Lahaina Harbor.
Yeah.
In between all those islands where it's nice and warm, and
mm-hmm.
down from Alaska.
Yeah. And yeah, that was that's one of the most interesting things, because it's it would not necessarily only be speaking to us humanoids, because this definitely was not the only kind of God-seeking being that was there and that I met. And of course, if we could hear whale song, maybe we might understand it. Or understand whale song, not hear it, but understand it.
Understand. Do you think because of your alien connection, that really helped you being able to hear these words, or could other people hear them after they played it over and over again, trying to figure out what it said?
They'll probably hear those words become much, much clearer. Since they know the words, I was surprised that it was in English, you know, and it could be encoded in a manner that, depending upon the listener, they could hear it in their language, because it's got enough broadness to some of the tones that it may be interpreted similarly. Maybe not the exact words, but in a similar sense, meaning the similar things. But in English, it sounds like these three, for you, are the God in heaven.
And tell us again what the three means.
The three?
Yes, the three.
The three are the representation of the triunity of God, or the Godhead, the Father. Father, which is the first source and center, the Son, which is the Creator Son. The Creator Son is well represented in Christian churches as Jesus Christ, the one who became a physical mortal. And what I was taught there was that Earth, Urantia, is special because we were chosen as both a species and a location, for him to be bestowed his seventh and last declining or descending bestow, or becoming a lower of his own creation. In other words, what he created, he became. And it was in seven different levels of a being. And the lowest of all, the mortal being, which we are, you know, we cut us, we bleed, you know. You can stop our bodies and we'll die. But essentially at the mortal level, he wanted to also show that we were created for eternal destiny. And that's why there's a certain kind of royalty that we who are actually fine in and can perhaps truly embrace those words, these three for you are the God in heaven, truly become, you know, like a royal group of sentient beings, having found it through, you know, through the mystery of many different things, through a web of confusion and disharmony. And we still find it. So for me, it was a great challenge, you know, and to have had this experience and know that all of what I experienced was something that needed to be shared, including this, something like interpreting this speech. It sounds like speech because there's intonation, there is what seems like to be words, but then when you fill them in with the words that I've just given you, these three for you are the God in heaven, and then the whale song, three pitches, and you can make that out to be whatever you want. But if we tie them together with another interesting revelation, the Urantia book, and you'll find that, oh yeah, it was the triunity of God, you know, who started the whole ball rolling, the universal ball of the totality of what is real. So anyway,
yeah, those words really have profound meaning.
Those words really have a what?
Profound meaning.
Oh yeah, profound. Yes. I know when decoded some of the coding when they tried to give words to our DNA, it broke up in the beginning of all strings of DNA. Is that God eternal in the body? God eternal in the body is the opening statement of all DNA. So if it, when they translate the DNA coding back to a intelligible text, it comes out that way. Which, of course, was a mathematically based text, which is, I think was Hebrew or Aramaic, one of the two. Anyway, that was pretty interesting. Another thing I interesting listening to Coase one night, I think I heard it was Brian Greene, I believe, who is one of the authors or one of the proponents of string theory, begin to say that he's beginning to move toward expansion theory also, which I was given as one of the basis for gravity and the expansion of things. And I was amazed that he's beginning to move toward that kinds of understanding as a physicist itself. So there's more and more intriguing things that are happening that are unraveling my experience there, because there are certain things that I learned that just simply challenged my own understanding. Of course, I was educated in up to that time, which was back in the 60s and 70s. And that's just it's just not you know, up to par anymore, of course. Anyway, let's see.
And there was another thing that was sent to us.
Oh yeah,
about that orbiting sphere around Saturn.
Right.
I'll also have that posted on the website.
Yeah, that's in a very, it's in the F ring. And the F ring is, I don't know how the A, C, D, E, F, you know. And that other spouting thing was, I believe, seen when they were photographing toward the E ring. So this, there's something going on. The F ring being, I guess, further out, something like that. But anyway, they count them through. And it looks like it's actually plowing, this object is plowing a pathway through the ring, because it leaves a wake of clear area in back of it. And if it was a moon, it would have long ago cleaned up that area. But it almost seems like something brand new just moving in there. But one thing I did notice, though, when I went toward, when I was taking and giving my first shot of, or first sight of the New Jerusalem ship or city up there, or architectural sphere, it looked like a light bulb, but it wasn't situated in the ring. It was outside of the ring. And it had that appearance of that light bulb looking shot that we've now got turned around and looked like a alien head with two dark eyes, which was a Photoshop job. So nice. I still think it looks like a light bulb, even though.
Yes,
but anyway.
Yes, it does. But even if you flip over the NASA real image, it does look like an alien head.
It does. So there's certain kinds of things that may be happening that will try to get the message across.
And, well, yeah, trying to get the message across. Here comes this the Cassini spacecraft. They're about to take a photograph of the of this luminous sphere.
Yes.
And they pop their top with that that N006-1934 number.
Yeah.
Which looks like the light bulb.
Yeah.
But then when you flip it upside down, it looks like an alien head. And now.
Yes.
And now they're speaking to the Cassini spacecraft in English.
In English, and it's saying that. I challenge everyone to try it just for if you want to hear something interesting, and with knowing these words, and see if you hear them. If not, fine. It's just noise. And I'm used to trying to get somebody's call sign through a whole bunch of noise.
All right, with the ham radio.
Ham radio stuff. So my ears are a little bit more acute.
So people need to hear it many times before.
Yeah, but with it being on YouTube, you just keep playing it over and over and over, and you finally begin to realize that's what it's saying. And in the beginning, I couldn't quite understand it. It almost sounded, in heaven, and my goodness. What's the rest of it? What's the beginning part? So anyway, it ends up being there are three for you, the God in heaven.
Now, when they say the God in heaven, where do you think they're referring to?
The entire universal. It's a general sense.
General sense, okay.
Yeah. Because they actually kind of knew a direction toward a heaven. I remember that. They all seemed to know. And it could be like the Urantia book points out in this area. But it is actually a physical, you can actually go there from the New Jerusalem, or if you're at Saturn in New Jerusalem and you take a ship, you could actually go there to this location, and they seem to know. It's sort of like knowing where New York, we know where New York is, or we know where Tokyo is, Paris, kind of like, oh yeah, we know, that's how it was for them. Anyway, what I was saying was in that one particular YouTube shot where this object is plowing through the rings, and what I can say in my experience was that when I was leaving the New Jerusalem, I was again allowed to see it, and I was also allowed to see it in proximity, very close proximity to a moon. So I know that this object was not... the New Jerusalem is not a orbiting satellite of Saturn. I mean, it's an actual mobile elliptical object that has it actually can pilot itself around and move itself around a lot. So, yeah, it could have been. In the rings, it may have been at the time. It may not have. I really can't say, but I know it doesn't stay in the same spot. It moves around.
So, do you think it could travel into the rings like that?
Well,
if they wanted to.
It says it's growing. They said it's always growing. So, and I was wondering, in relation to the big beaming craft, I kind of said, are you like mining with that? And they said, like, in a way, we're mining, in a way. But I was thinking, you need materials to get this place bigger. He says, there's a lot around here, close by. That ship, that big ship with the V-wing and the holes underneath the wings, was it meant to mine close to an area close by, or harvest or whatever, it was for another purpose. Because apparently their term for what they needed was all close by. So to them, close by would to me close by for them would be right around Saturn. So if they need some stuff from the rings, plenty of stuff in it, maybe, and just go mine it. The thing gets getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Well, it's so huge you can see it.
Yeah, it's gotten that big.
I mean, Saturn is almost 10 times the size of Earth.
Well,
so if you think of how big
Earth in orbit around Saturn, I mean, it would look like a moon.
Yes, it would look like a moon.
A moon around Saturn, yeah.
It would probably be smaller than the architectural world out there. Don't you think?
What, Earth?
Yes, don't you think Earth is much larger?
Much larger than the architectural world, but Earth itself, orbiting Saturn, would look like a moon. Yeah,
but
Saturn is pretty big.
Yes, but just being able to see that object move around, that shows that how huge that thing really is.
Really, it is. I mean, I saw the inside of it, and again, it's hollow, and it is very, very large. Its interior is easily could encompass Hawaii, Hawaii State, because from the top of Haleakala on Maui, I can see the big island of Hawaii, and on the clearest of days, I could see Kauai from there.
Oh, wow.
On the very clearest of days, but almost all the time, I can see the big island and Oahu. But now with the volcano going, and that brings me into the subject of Earth changes.
Oh, with the fog out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of fog, so the visibility has really gone bad, way down now. So I really can't see very far.
So in other words, you can't see 300 miles.
No, but it was a time where I remember seeing that far. And, of course, in the New Jerusalem, the air is pristine and very clean. It's a little different from what we breathe. But it is... it was so far to the other side, I really couldn't see it. I could see the sides, pair off into the distance, just sort of fade off into the distance. Then I looked directly across, and I couldn't see. I saw the clouds, wispy clouds in the middle, and I couldn't see the other side. So it's just huge.
Well, it has to be huge to be able to be seen from a distance from Saturn as it goes around the rings.
I don't know if that could be another craft of its own, just a harvesting away.
Oh,
that
yeah.
is not New Jerusalem itself, but another craft.
Another craft.
That's over there just,
well,
picking up what they need.
That has to be huge also.
Yeah, yeah. So I really don't know. I know that they are very busy.
So can you imagine the news media saying, oh, and today we've NASA's announcing that they're seeing something out near Saturn that is not a moon. I can't imagine something like that being broadcast.
Well, anyway.
Probably slow some people
it's
down.
It's there, and it's been... seen in more ways than one. And again, we have another one, which is a magnetic anomaly orbiting quickly around Saturn. It's not a magnetosphere, it's a toroidal shape, and it's, like a donut, and it's a lump of energy that's rotating in there. That's another way of looking at it and detecting some powerful anomaly. It should be, even... donut shape. That was a lump that's going around at the same speed as the rotation of the planet, as Saturn itself. But it's possibly that they're using that to create some energy, electrical energy. Not sure. That's why they probably have a Frondelenk in there that's just regulating all kinds of energy. One, of course, they did say some of the energy that it was working with was electrical. Some was, they said it was, they had some mechanistic energy that was flowing through that. Not just that electrical energy, some other forms of energy. Anyway, that's a another point. There is another thing I received this letter from, you forwarded to me, Curtis, from Josh.
Oh, yes.
And he left me a clip of his hair. So I decided to just go quiet with it telepathically, or just simply pray for Josh. And what a powerful surge of energy went through me for his sake. So I apparently it was something that Josh is very attuned to, and when I did contact and use his hair as a point of him, you know, for him, it's just a tremendous energy that just flowed, you know, from his hair, just sort of like became a vehicle for his desire. So just hope that whatever he had in his heart has, you know, really come true. I'd like to hear from him, though, see what happened from that time. But anyway.
Yes, he's on an Indian reservation in New Mexico.
Uh-huh. And it's so powerful, powerful. We've had that happen to us at a temple once in Japan. I mean, I'm talking about energies, the spiritual energies that are far stronger than we expected to have come from people, you know, or for us to simply channel energies toward God, you might say. And it happened in a temple in Japan. A woman was all bent over, and, you know, she was in, you know, very, very, you know, seemingly like really, really troubled. And wife and I stood apart, one on each side, and we decided to contact and make prayers, would be more formal. And what a powerful move happened, and it was as if the dam broke and all this energy. She simply walked out of there like a new person. So sometimes, you know, we do help, you know, and we do help escort some people's requests sometimes, you might say, towards the divine. And I just hope that might have happened for Josh. I seem to feel very strongly that it did. Biblically, there's accounts in which a poor woman, a Samaritan woman, crawled up on in the back of Jesus Christ and simply touched the bottom or the hem of his clothes, and immediately Jesus felt all this energy just pass from him into someplace. And he looked about and he said, "Who touched me?" And it was this woman. And anyway, she had become very attuned to her desire, very pure, and the energy simply flowed. And this is what kind of stuff I was talking about happens with Josh here, with his little lock of hair, or with some of these other people. So it's actually, of course, the woman went away and she was healed, and the one that Jesus was talking about, the woman that was at the temple, was all troubled, went away with like a load lifted off of her. And I hope whatever Josh had going on has been good, because apparently, you know, as far as, you know, with mail service here, as far as what we were, it seems like it went, you know, this spiritual energy just flowed out of us, and flowed for Josh and for others. So anyway, that's just one of the things that I just wanted to mention. Some of you out there are actually quite tuned in. Yeah,
that's great. There are. It's nice to hear from the people and hear how your words have been moving them.
Yeah. It is, and I really appreciate any of the contact that people are making toward us, whether through my, you know, to me directly or through Curtis or through the, you know, website, through Curtis. And this is one of the most wonderful. This particular Paul sending us this YouTube alien speech found in NASA's Saturn radio signal. It's quite a discovery for me, anyway. I thought I heard it once or twice, but immediately when I heard it that time, I recognized, of course, it was representative. But this time, I actually heard the words, so I just gave them, to you and the words to hear. So hopefully you can try it, see if you hear them too. It would be a profound discovery for yourself if it is something that you actually can hear.
I hope they can hear the words in there.
Yeah. But it's a very interesting analog signals or, continuously variable signals that haven't gone through so many decoding stages, encoding stages, like our speech right now has probably taken at least two changes going from analog to digital. I know somewhere along the line it's gone to digital. And of course, if anyone heard digital, you just cannot make it out because it's nothing but ones and zeros. But this signal that has been received there is analog. And that's what we have as far as listening acoustically. It's an analog signal. When I speak through my, my mouth and my vocal cords vibrate the air in an analog manner, and purely analog all the way. So all this did was to take an analog signal and then heterodyne it down a little bit to make it closer to what we can hear. And this is what we hear. This is amazing. It's almost like it's just basically an AM radio signal from a broadcast station.
Do you think that's normal for them to transmit that an AM signal?
I think it is it's something that they embedded there as anyone, greeted. It was something that picked up from Riley that said that he was given, made aware of the sound of the rings of Saturn. And the ships, as I say, are alive. They have a type of crystalline structure that may decode somewhat, or intercept or detect the radio energy. And you actually probably could hear the analog signal through the vessel, because they told Riley, listen to the rings, you can hear them singing. Can you hear them singing? And he said he could hear them. For me, we were not in the rings, or not in close enough proximity, I guess. It was more my visual cue to look at the luminous light bulb object. We weren't very close to the rings. The rings were further off. These were detected flying over the ring, so it's very close. As far as our radio signal, it probably is a very weak radio signal. But Riley was definitely given that opportunity. Also, there's much talk about celestial sounds and songs in John's Revelation. Again, that is even the Apostle Paul's account kind of gives a hint toward unbelievable music. So this is interesting, very interesting. As you said, Curtis, it's profound. If you can actually detect it, just not me, but other people can, it would be profound to hear those. They say, yeah, that's what I hear. Now I can hear those words.
Yeah, well, the whole implication of them speaking to us in English when our spacecraft comes out, and that's, I mean, how much more direct do they have to be for us to take notice? I mean, we're taking notice, and
yeah,
the listeners can hear this, and with the Urantia book, it is all quite a connection together.
It is. It's quite connected together, and it seems as if when we finally get toward exploring Saturn, and we did, they had that message already for us. And so far, particular people haven't, you know, been able to decode it as far as listening, but having known the meaning, and I wanted to know if I could hear words, and I actually began to hear the words really clearly after a while. So anyway, that's my little discovery of the day. And it's like only hours old with this discovery that I, you know, just heard this. So you're pretty much getting it fresh off the experience.
Yeah, fresh.
Yeah, it's only a couple hours old.
And the Cassini's been out there for 2 years now, and I hear the Cassini mission is going to be over at the end of June.
Yeah, it's they've come to an end of their, their mission.
Yeah, a list of experiments they want to do and things they want to look at.
Yeah, it's a lot of unraveling that goes on after that, and as far as this one goes, this is my version of unraveling some of the mystery of this signal.
Well, you had mentioned Coast to Coast. That's Coast to Coast AM radio. It's a West Coast show. And it's broadcasted through many AM and FM stations around the country.
Right.
But they don't really have anyone talking about this luminous sphere out near Saturn.
I don't think so.
They don't have anyone from NASA on for sure.
Yeah, they're
talking about it.
Mm-hmm. But it's interesting. It's almost as if there are some people who have listened to us and have like taken some of the subjects, like I did point out, was this, you know, the author of The Elegant Universe, let's see, I agree. Anyway, it was so interesting to hear him say that he's kind of leaning toward expansion as another phenomenon of the physics that string theory needs to undergo, not only a multiverse or multidimensional or brain theory, but the actual concept that was given to me in just a plain statement that everything is growing. And he's moving toward that as a physicist too. This is something that he actually came forward and said on Coast to Coast. So I was like, wow, these guys are actually catching on to some of this stuff. I was beginning to think, you know, this is the stuff they're telling me is just a bunch of poop, you know mm-hmm. that they told me. But actually, we're catching up to where they're thinking. I mean, their base knowledge is, their basics is, you know, we're just discovering some of that. And now we're just right on that, I guess, the bleeding edge where people get, you know, hurt sometimes the discoveries of things. Anyway, this is a matter of both the understanding of our physics, our space, our who we are, dimensionality, the reality of God, the totality, the deity. Why would Saturn have in its ring the statement, such a profound statement, to me, it's like, you know, it's
Are you saying that this statement is encoded in the rings?
The one that, well, it's, yeah, it's, it, it was recorded anyway, and sounds like speech, and then again, I listen to it, and this is what I come up with, and whether, you know, you can hear it or not, that's what I come up with, and it sounds very much like that.
So this isn't a, so this sound wasn't produced by their spacecraft. This was produced by the rings.
Yes, yes.
But they probably placed these, the objects of the rings, in a manner to get this tone to come out.
Mm-hmm. Could be. Maybe they're related in the sense of how that object is going plowing through the rings. And, you know, and it's actually leaving a certain, it's like a stylus cutting a record groove, you know. Mm-hmm. It could be something as simple as that, so that there's a message there. But anyway.
As simple as cutting the record groove.
Yeah.
In the rings, that's pretty funny.
It's pretty funny, yeah. It's pretty funny.
It's pretty funny.
But it could very well be something like that, encoding some kind of a little strip of message that needs to be flown through and recorded.
And this is not your imagination hearing this?
What?
This is not your imagination hearing this, hearing these words.
That's a challenge of what I've thrown out there. It's a challenge for whether it's your imagination or whether you actually can hear it. Well, for me, I've been able to pull out people's call signs through heavy, 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 what we call QRN noise, and then be confirmed that we actually heard these guys. Anybody coming through and sitting down next to me would say, "What are you listening to?"
Yeah.
No, can't you hear this guy? And his call sign is something, 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 you know, and then they go, "Oh, no." And then we find out, yeah. He heard me clearly. He sends me a card, and I got him in my logbook, and I say, "Okay, I'll send you another one. We did make the contact right over the North Pole." Anyway, So it goes.
Well, those people in the North Pole, they certainly would like to talk to Hawaii.
Well, I haven't talked with the North Pole yet. I've done a lot with Antarctica.
Oh.
But that's just ham radio stuff. But anyway.
Well, that's pretty neat. Talking to those guys down there?
Yeah. And one guy, he didn't want to let me go. I was surprised. I said, there might be a lot of people who want to talk to you. So I stepped aside and nobody came. You know, I guess nobody else could hear him real clear. So I ended up talking to him for quite a long time. He enjoyed it. You know, he was telling me about the temperature there and everything.
And you can't believe it.
Huh?
And you couldn't believe it.
I couldn't relate to it. I told him I can't relate,
to
what you're going through. It's like he's on another planet.
Yeah, he certainly is.
Well, anyway, I've pretty much covered these things that I found very, very, very interesting. And hopefully, you know, people can hear the sounds.
Yeah, I'm anxious to listen to it.
Well, let's listen to it again.
Yes, play it again.
Thank you. So these three for you are the God in Heaven and the Whale Song, the three pitches. So.
And the three pitches, could you tell us about that?
Yeah, the three high pitch, you know, rising tones.
Yes, in the beginning.
They're symbolic of the triunity of the Godhead, I guess. Father, Son, Holy Ghost, or whatever you want to say like that. But it says, I could hear it, these three for you are the God in Heaven.
Wow. Encoded in the rings.
Yeah. Well, if you can't hear it, then you can say it's not for you. But for me, it's come up somewhat profound. Yeah. And I've got trained ears, so.
How many times did you have to hear it before you heard it?
Well, the first part, these three, was easy. It was almost immediate.
Mm-hmm.
But then I couldn't make out the middle part, and then it was personal. I kept feeling the message was to me was take it personally. Then it said, "Oh, these three for you are the God in Heaven." So that's the middle part. A little bit, for you is a little hard. It was for me too, but I had some help.
Well, you did. You had some help.
Yeah, of course, yeah. These three for you are the God in Heaven. So whoever can hear it, or, you know, they want to, they'll be able to hear it. They don't want to, they'll hear nothing but gobbledygook.
Well, we want to thank Paul J.S. for sending that to us.
Yeah. But at least the people who put it on YouTube actually think it's some kind of speech form.
Oh. Yeah, well, sending it to us is sending it to everybody.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm not sure if there's anything else that we need to talk about.
Okay, well, we don't have any questions from anyone that have sent anything in. On a lighter note, I can say the swans that live here on the Delaware River with us are now sitting on four eggs, and an egg came every other day, and they take turns on the nest, and I take water down there, but boy, you can't get close to those guys, so in the water dish, I'm just splashing them with water, saying, "This is water, this is water, this is water." I stick it next to the nest, and so they lift their heads up in the air and thank me. "Oh, thank you." And they make their guttural sounds.
Uh-huh.
But they're really beautiful.
Oh, yeah. That's good. Because, you know, that's, you know, an egg starts the whole thing, you know. But if the swans don't come out of the egg, then, you know, the egg just is alone.
Well, these swans are rather heavy. I don't know how much they weigh. I'll guess maybe over, maybe close to 20 pounds.
Oh, yeah.
And, but anyway, they were stepping on one of the eggs, so I thought, wow, those eggs must have super hard shells.
I guess so.
Not like a chicken egg.
Mm-hmm.
I had an ostrich egg for a while, and that shell is extremely hard.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's all in relationship to how big the bird is.
Yeah.
But the nest is right next to the house, between the house and the creek. And they have takeoff room to the river. They're only 15 or 20 feet from the river edge. But this has all been amazing, Michael, all these hours. It's surprising how much has come out and how much you've said, and it seems like things come out all the time, and today was a real different one with what Paul J.S. sent in.
Yeah, well, it's fresh off the press, you might say, for us. I didn't know about this. Although I did hear the sounds before, I didn't realize it, and didn't really decode it till just a couple hours ago.
Now, at the bottom of the NASA page are two audio links. One is the sounds going through the rings, and the other is what I thought you were referring to, that what you're talking about now. Is that the same thing, or is this a little different?
It's a little different.
I
but
see.
Ultimately, you know, our radio is an emission of electrons and magnetic fields or radio waves. I'm saying it in that way because it's still a little bit of mystery, you know, although we can use it quite readily. There's a bit to the energetics that happen that we are not fully aware of, and how we can generate them thermionically is another thing that has been well known. And of course, there are different types of components. It's icy material, barrier cold, impacted, causing something called a piezoelectric effect, which is impact or creating a electromotive activity. But it doesn't have this randomness to it that, you know, would say it's just that it's just, you know, noise. It's not random. It's, you know, it's got three definite, you know, rising tones as if listen, you know, it's very significant tones, like a whale song. And it's far from random. What would be random generation, white noise or pink noise? And this is far from that. And as I said, I've got the kind of training, you know, to pick out signals way underneath the noise or through noise that distorts the actual speech. So sometimes they would repeat their call sign several times before I get it correctly. And this is a matter which may require you to do also, as I'm, you know, trying to listen to that YouTube sound effects of the radio signal as it passes over the rings of Saturn, really getting a playback, you might say.
Well, I hope people write in when they hear it, if they could write in and let Michael know, or let us know, and even if you can't hear it, write in and give your comment. But that's that just blows me away that these beings move the objects in the rings around to get that sort of like cutting a record.
Could very well be. I don't know. It's very, very interesting.
And the fact that the rings are round, and they're going around and around, it's like the perfect thing to do.
Right. Exactly. And they have fun. It's definitely not a boring place. Not boring, not one bit. There was no time I was bored there. There's times I was contemplating what was happening or being confused, but I was not bored.
Not bored.
Yeah.
Well, we're getting close to the end of the hour, and this has been really remarkable. I'm really anxious to listen to this myself and post this on the site.
Right.
And Josh, thanks for sending in your energy to Michael. And I guess we'll talk to you next week, Michael.
Okay.
All right, time to say aloha.
Aloha.
Aloha. Bye.
Bye.